T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway. The most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where?
To 11.
11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
We talk football and Kiss fandom with Mike Florio. We talked to Brian Hamilton just now about college basketball, but plenty of baseball, the continuing fallout from the Mike Trout contract, and Chris Bryant saying, yeah, these guys are re-signing with their own teams. I might be a free agent, be the only one, and have all the interest. And it's great to hear that somebody like Bryant, who now is also the player rep that they, and you mentioned, no coincidence when guys like LeBron James and Chris Paul become much more involved in collective bargaining when it's their big paydays that are at stake. I think the same could be going on here with Chris Bryant.
Yeah, we talked tournament with Brian Hamilton as well. I just started filling out, just kind of absentmindedly filling out a bracket, letting the hand work a little bit. And I realized that in the Sweet 16, it could be Virginia and Wisconsin playing one of the most unwatchable brands of basketball, all of them at the same time, and I need something to change. I don't want that either. This from Derbyshire in the UK. I'm sure Derbyshire is pronounced something different, like
Derbyshire,
Johnsonville or something like that, because letters don't mean anything over there. Police in one United Kingdom county say a man was arrested for alleged drunk driving after he was reported by another driver. What makes the story stand out from many other drunk driving stories is that the driver who made the report was also arrested for allegedly driving drunk. Officials with the Derbyshire Roads Policing Unit said you couldn't make this up in a tweet they made to the department's verified Twitter account. The guy called to accuse the first driver of drunk driving while forgetting that he himself was under the influence. So,
I forgot.
One of the drivers blew 40 micrograms per 100 milliliters of breath. That is 5 milligrams over the legal limit there, so think of it that way. The other blew 78 micrograms per 100 milliliters. That's almost twice the legal limit. Which one was the one that forgot he was drunk? The one that was just a little bit over, or the one that was twice the limit?
The latter.
I think it's the latter two.
Yeah, okay.
The police haven't said, but it's got to be the guy that was twice the legal limit.
You mentioned you made pasta last night.
I did
too. I don't know what kind of sauce you made. I cooked
vodka sauce.
I made a lovely puttanesca with olives and capers and anchovies. And if you like making such things, watch out. This, according to CBS2 Chicago, there is an olive oil shortage in Italy. A severe winter and a massive bacterial infestation are crippling Italy's olive trees, especially in Puglia, in the boot of Italy that produces 40% of the country's yield.
Not the boot.
The boot. Italian extra virgin oil. 100% you're going to be challenged to find it. This, according to the chef at Cortino, John Coletta, said production's down by 57%. And they said 20 million olive trees have died. The lack of production has doubled the price of Italian olive oil. Said Orlando Imports and Carroll Stream ships in a 250,000 gallons of Italian olive oil to Chicago. And the owner there says it's going to double the price of a 3-liter tin from $25 to $50. There's going to be a shortage sooner rather than later. By law, 100% Italian olive oil must be marked product of Italy. But to meet demand, Italian producers might mix it with olives from Spain or Greece. And the lower-priced product should be marked differently. You will see packed in Italy. And then they will show the different countries where the origin of the olives comes from. And I have had perfectly good results with with
all kinds.
Spanish olive oil, with Portuguese olive oil.
I don't notice a difference.
And for the I will say this, some of the greatest, of the greenest, fruitiest, you wouldn't even want to cook with it. It's almost like it's only
what do you do
drizzling. It's only
oh, you drizzle.
It is only for drizzling.
Or the bread parmesan pepper thing.
I wouldn't even.
You do that one?
There is a Greek olive oil. There are some small batch Greek olive oils that are almost bright green sitting in the cruet. And it's just, it's not to cook with because it's.
Just look at it. Don't even point at it.
Yeah, it's too good.
This from Michigan. A man trying to kill a cockroach accidentally shot himself.
Okay.
I think he's fine.
Yeah.
Michigan man's attempt to kill a cockroach Tuesday morning really backfired. The 50-year-old man spotted an insect inside his Detroit home and decided to neutralize the threat by throwing his shoe at it, according to police. The problem with his chucking the shoe at the cockroach is that he forgot that he had put his revolver in the shoe.
How big is his shoe?
So he throws the shoe, the revolver and the shoe hit the cockroach, the gun goes off, and the man shot himself in his foot by throwing his shoe with the revolver.
Wait, how big or heavy?
There are several questions to ask.
How can you pick up a shoe and not notice there's a gun in it?
Right, so obviously that has an answer. It's got to be a boot then. I mean, this has to be a heavy shoe to begin with. Secondly, the man has to have some sort of real fear of cockroaches to pick up the shoe that quickly and throw it. This was a quick reaction. This wasn't a thought-out motion. This wasn't let me find the shoe and chuck it at a cockroach.
Right.
This was just reaction stuff. Thirdly, what I can't figure out is what prompts you to put the revolver in the shoe to begin with. That's not a storage place. That's not a hiding spot. It's a shoe. Somebody's going to... You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the reason to put the revolver in the shoe? It makes one pair of shoes completely unwearable, unless you've got a revolver in the other shoe just to balance things out. But I can't figure a pair of shoes where that feels comfortable either. Still, it sounds like the man is in fair condition, but unclear as to exactly where the gunshot hit him in the foot.
This is from KLKN-TV, and this is a miracle amid disaster. What two men say they found in a field near Linwood, Nebraska, has them gaining fame they never expected on social media. On Sunday, Kyle Simpson and his friend Galand Stoffer were surveying flood damage on property where Simpson runs a duck hunting club. And it's been awful. There, people have been losing their homes and their farms and all of their livestock are just getting swept away. Dams are breaking. People have been in danger. They've been working all day trying to clean up the mess left behind by the floodwaters. And just as they were getting ready to leave, Stoffer noticed something laying in the muddy field. Simpson thought it was a black box, and Stoffer said otherwise, and he walked over, and it was a mini refrigerator. Not only was it a mini refrigerator, it was completely full of cold beer.
Oh, yeah.
Stocked with Busch Light and Bud Light, about three cases worth, and he said the freezer still had ice in it. So lying in the middle of this field, I mean, it is exactly how you picture it.
Oh, yeah, just right there.
It was all by itself. It's not like a mini dorm fridge either, a decent size, filled with beer. So Simpson texted the pictures to a friend who posted them to a Facebook page. The post has received thousands of likes and shares. He doesn't have a Facebook page, so he's a little dismayed by the fame. But they did get in contact with the owner of the fridge. So they talked to the owner, and he learned the fridge had also been involved in a fire at the family's cabin in 2007. It's now been through a fire and a flood.
It's a miracle fridge.
It's a miracle beer fridge. And they're making arrangements to reunite the fridge with its rightful owner, but they say it's going to be a little lighter than it was, and we're going to make sure he gets his cooler back minus a couple of beers. And the pictures are just great. And the fridge is still in the field. He says, it is a gift from Mother Nature. Sometimes she taketh away. This time she giveth.
So the FCC complaints for the Super Bowl halftime show are out. They are just about every year pretty funny. Deadspin puts these out. And I will give you that we don't know whether some of these are jokes or whether some of these are real complaints. So I'll put it to you to decide. I've tried to cultivate some of the best that I thought were actual complaints from the Super Bowl halftime show. You know, so I've weeded out the ones where like, oh, this is bad, or very clearly trolling some things. But remember, Adam Levine took his shirt off. So there are going to be people actually aggravated by the fact that they saw a man with his shirt off. This, though, we start in Lansing, Michigan, where this is more angry about the decency of the lyrics themselves. If a performer has to be censored during the Super Bowl, all caps, should not be performing to begin with. The rapper was distasteful and disgusting. That sounds like a real complaint.
Mm-hmm.
This from Blackwood, New Jersey. Rapper. Part of the Super Bowl was racist against white people. Calling white people crackers is reverse discrimination. That seems like a real complaint.
Yes, no, there's no doubt. And that's a regular texter.
Yeah, I think that's right. From Louisville, Kentucky, I was horrified to see Adam Levine take his shirt off and expose his nipples. It is absolutely not the place for nipples on national TV while children are watching. What is the place for nipples on national TV while children are watching? That's my question.
The Nipple Children's Network.
This from Eugene, Oregon. I find it offensive to see Adam Levine showing two nipples where one nipple was deemed unnecessary just years ago.
Uh-huh.
So
that's really the question. Why is it okay for him?
There's calls for him to make a public apology and a fine all at the same time. You've got, from Barrington, Illinois. I am offended and troubled by the actions taken during the Super Bowl halftime show. I am stunned that I was forced to see a topless man gyrating and gesticulating during the show. How can it be appropriate that a man expose himself that way during a family program?
He didn't take his pants off.
It is offensive and sexual, and I do not believe CBS endorses this type of unannounced nudity. No. CBS only endorses announced nudity, not the unannounced type. There's some really good ones in here. Those are some of the best. I think most of these are real, honest-to-God complaints about your Super Bowl halftime show.
Travel with me back in time to the days of Stonehenge. No one knows who they were or what they were doing, but their legacy remains hewn into the living rock. Okay, sky.com. Archaeologists have uncovered evidence of early large-scale celebrations, with people traveling hundreds of miles for feasting rituals. These are sites close to Stonehenge. And the study examined the bones of 131 pigs from four late Neolithic complexes. The animals came from as far away as Scotland, the northeast of England, and West Wales, other sites in Britain. Researchers believe that those attending the feasts, these grand pagan feasts, may have wanted to contribute animals raised locally at their homes. Before the study, the origins of the people who took part in the rituals and the extent of the journeys would have been a mystery. But the study lead, Dr. Richard Madgwick from the University of Cardiff, said it demonstrates a scale of movement and level of social complexity not previously appreciated. These gatherings could be seen as the first united cultural events of the island, with people from all corners of Britain descending on the areas around Stonehenge to feast on food that had been specially reared and transported from their homes. The Neolithic henge complexes were the focal point for the gatherings. We're talking about the 3rd millennium B.C. Millennium B.C. Pigs were the main animal used for food, and analyzing them provides the best indication of where people who feasted had come from. Researchers used isotope analysis, identifying chemical signals from the food and water the animals consumed, to determine the geographical areas where the pigs were raised.
That's awesome.
So it showed them the degree of mobility across Britain at the time of Stonehenge. It said arguably the most startling finding is the efforts that participants invested in contributing pigs that they had raised. Procuring them in the vicinity of the feasting sites would have been easy, but pigs are not nearly as well suited to movement over distance as cattle, and transporting them, either slaughtered or on the hoof, over hundreds or tens of kilometers would have required a monumental effort. So that means prescribed contributions were required. The rules dictated that offered pigs must be raised by the feasting participants, accompanying them on their journey, rather than being acquired locally.
What?
How cool is that?
That's
you
very
bring
cool.
Bring your own artisan-raised pig of your terroir. We're not going to have any pigs around here. You must bring a representative raised pig to the Stonehenge
feast. It's like a 5,000-year-old farmer's market.
Yes.
That's totally cool. And a purpose for Stonehenge. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You won't want to go anywhere.
Oh, no.
Because in the spirit of March, the boys of the I'm Fat podcast have put together March Fatness.
We've got the bracket. The bracket is there
the bracket
for
is
you.
Out. It is hotly contested. There are some 12 fives that'll make you larger. There are some 116s that could be an upset to more than just your blood sugar. It is going to be one hell of an I'm Fat March Fatness, and we will get to the brackets when we come back.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Spring football's underway. Coach Fitz and the Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Come see them. Matchups include Ohio State and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. The I'm Fat podcast takes this show over next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The I'm Fat podcast. Our friend Jay Zawoski and Rick Camp.
It's a big time of year for these guys because they've got their field. The Onion Ring of Honor is going to have a new member when the voting is done for March Fatness 2019. Gentlemen, the floor is yours, reinforced as it is.
Jay is actually running to get printed brackets so you guys can...
Well, he's not running.
Sauntering? Yeah. You want to go? Let's go with sauntering.
Loping or galumphing can also be appropriate.
The way we went about this is we wanted to get two fellow fats involved.
Okay.
So we had on the podcast, at I'm Fat Pod on Twitter, we asked fellow fats and normies to leave a voicemail and say why they deserve to be in charge of a region.
Okay.
So they did that, and we have Russ Schneider, who's a P1 to the podcast.
Russ Schneider.
And he's got the top left. If you're looking at it, you can find the bracket online as well. The number one seed is Bacon. Probably the one of ones to start this year, which makes a ton of sense.
Now, last year's winner was...
Pizza.
Pizza.
So this can be a food, a thing, a person. So he has Bacon going against Destination XL.
There's a
fat guy store.
Sure.
It's a little, it's got a lot of stuff, but it's costs a little bit. So then you have Peter Griffin taking on the 2018 men's U.S. curling team.
See,
that's inspired.
That's a tough one, because really the 2018 men's curling team were four Peter Griffins.
With beards.
Of course.
Don't mistake that. By the way, we had a couple people ask, are they voting for who they think will win or who they want to win? It's who you want to win.
Of course.
Who do you want in the Onion Ring of Honor? So don't worry about the seeds. It's whoever you prefer.
That would be a very level of meta. Vote for who you want to win in a tournament where we're asking you who wins.
Yeah. Oh, it's not perfect, but this is the way we're doing it, Connor.
No, I like it. I think we're getting people on track.
So this is in Russ Schneider's region. We're through two games here. The 5-12 is always interesting, though.
Snack machines and buffets.
Ooh.
Two vessels and two ways to get your food. So that's really interesting.
The committee really thought about that one.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Score listeners are going to love snack machine, though.
Then 4-13. Intriguing, because one has been incorporated into the other. Oreos taking on craft beer.
Okay.
That is tough. Your quantity has the Oreos, though. You know,
this is true. Your 6-11 has Ben and Jerry, the actual people,
okay,
taking on slip-on shoes.
It's not Ben and Jerry's ice cream. It's,
no.
It's Ben and Jerry.
Correct. The icons themselves.
Their contributions to the larger lifestyle.
Against shoes you don't need to bend down and tie.
Correct.
Which is really all shoes if you try hard enough. Just look at the back of my shoe someday.
I think that one's ripe for an upset, but maybe that's just me. Your 3-14 is the Pizza Puff taking on waffles.
Mm.
Okay.
7-10 is the Cake taking on food delivery apps.
And members of Cake.
That's the first time in the field for the food delivery apps. It's really come on strong this year.
Upstart program.
And then the 2-15 is drive-thru taking on tortillas.
Drive-through is the two seed. The idea of being able to pull your car up to a building and be handed food.
And you could get tortillas at the drive-through. Yeah, that's true. That's a strong two seed.
All right, where do we go next?
We'll go to my bracket next. The number one seed for me, the combo appetizer platter.
Yeah.
Where you just get to pick four fried items and just chow down on them for about $9.99. You can't beat that. And the winner of yesterday's play-in game, Hibachi, took down Big Al, the Little League superstar. So the number one seed, combo appetizer platter versus Hibachi. The 8-9, hot fudge versus French bread pizza.
Mm.
This is a tough one for me.
Boy.
Yeah.
And not for me, it's not.
No?
No, French bread pizza in a walk.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's a 25-point win.
Hot fudge, are you kidding? That just tops off the decision.
Nah.
All right, the number five seed, breading. Up against number 12, Totino's Pizza Rolls.
So how many different iterations?
Breading as a concept.
After pizza wins last year, already we have pizza puff.
Look, it's not the same.
French bread pizza and pizza rolls.
I could have pizza on Monday and have French bread pizza on Tuesday.
It's
and
a
pizza
copycat roll. Industry.
Yeah, right. Pizza rolls Wednesday, and I had three different things 3 days in a row.
Breading.
Everybody's shooting the three now. Pizza, it's a copycat league.
All right, the four seed, cheese fries in a cup, specifically in the drinking cup. It's got to be, you got to order that special, the special way in the cup. Where they put all the fries in the 32-ounce cup and then just fill it with cheese. Mm-hmm. That's against number 13, memory foam.
Mattresses,
pillows, shoes, the whole schmear.
Okay. Now,
is memory foam that much of a boon to the I'm fat lifestyle?
Well, I'm a fat guy and I wear Skechers, and there are memory foam Skechers.
I was unaware.
I'm wearing them as we speak.
And they're outstanding.
I'm not a fat guy and I am wearing them because they're the best dad shoes ever.
All right, so this next one needs some clarification. Southsiders will know when I say white hot dogs, that is the opposite of the Vienna. It is the non-snap white colored,
much less athletic.
Yes, the white hot dog served at Juniors, at Don's Hot Dogs, all those
white
places on the south side.
Okay. Yep.
I don't know anything about that. Is that like a veal brat?
No, it's a pork hot dog.
White!
Yes, exactly. Up against New Balance white shoes, the 11 dogs. Seed. New Balance shoes designed and made for fat people, even though they try to deny it.
They say they're for runners.
Right.
Come on.
That's not true. The number three seed, chocolate chip cookies.
Ooh, formidable.
Against, yeah, well, tough matchup here with corn dogs.
Ooh, you got to de-stick them.
Yeah. Blammers. Number seven, one of my favorites, compression shorts.
You know what I mean?
Up against exit row seating on an airplane. Absolutely outstanding.
It's got a lot of common appeal, too. Exit row seating. I mean, everybody loves that.
And the number two seed, the punt, pass, and kick 13-year-old Andy Reid up against Little Debbie's.
All of Little Debbie's.
The snack cake empire itself, yes.
Okay. So that completes the Jay Zawoski region. We are halfway through our March Fatness Bracket, the bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With only five home games remaining, the first place Chicago Wolves are making their push to the playoffs. Grab your pack and save with a Wolves fan four-pack. Tickets and food are included at one low price. For ticket information, visit chicagowolves.com.
All right, let's go to the bottom right quadrant here. That is my region. The number one seed, Spice Adams.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
sure.
Come on.
We talk about icons of fatness.
He really is.
He's one of them.
He's Zion.
Yeah, he pretty much is, actually.
2 feet shorter.
And the winner of my play-in game yesterday, very tight contest, as most of our things are, wide recliner beat hot sauce yesterday. So it's Spice Adams against the wide recliner.
Ooh.
My 8-9 matchup is insulin. Against cheese curds.
Okay.
That's another tough 8-9. This bracket is brutal.
One
for
of
the
them
eight,
I
nines.
Can't live without, and the other is insulin.
The 5-12 is Billy Bob from Varsity Blues.
I'm actually picturing Jay injecting himself with cheese curds with a really wide gauge hypodermic needle.
It's actually a McDonald's straw.
It's just a garden hose.
It's not working.
Blowing cheese curds into his heart.
So 5-12 is Billy Bob from Varsity Blues against the chimichanga.
Oh yeah, the deep fried burrito.
And when you get a good chimichanga, that there's few things better. I think part of the reason it was a 12 seed is because there's some variety. You can get some. some consistency issues.
When
there.
A burrito is not enough,
deep fried,
the late lamented Cisco's restaurant had the greatest.
That was the spot.
Oh, that was the first chimichanga I've ever had, and I've been chasing it ever since.
The 413 is the four seed, the Baker Square French Silk Pie.
Icon.
Oh,
it's the one of ones for pies. Oh.
That's an icon. I believe Chris Tannehill, big fan, is he not?
I think everybody is pretty much. Yeah. Against the 13 seed Eric Cartman from South Park.
A young upstart.
Okay.
He was in the field last year, had a little bit of a down year, fell in his seeding.
Mm.
The 6 seed Brisket.
Mm-hmm.
It's Brisket. Takes on the 11 seed the Reaching Claw, which is that thing you can get it from as seen on TV where it's just a little clamp that you press
yes,
the handle.
The trigger.
Yeah, and the suction cup's on the end, and you can grab things while sitting in your wide recliner.
The Reaching Claw.
How do I get my Reaching Claw?
It's like you're reaching for brisket.
Could be. The number 3 seed, and you can do all that while wearing Vince Wilfork's ribs hat.
Yes.
Which is that different from Bartolo Colon's ribs hat?
Yes, one is Vince Wilfork.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Probably the same size, though. Against the 14 seed, the Chicago Bears Santa's sleigh play,
which had all the fat guys.
Yes, which the only non-fat out there was Mitch Trubisky. This might be my favorite in my region. The 7 seed Gritty goes against the 10 seed Mike Francesa.
How do you tell them apart?
And then the 2 seed Gold Bond.
Anti-chafing.
Yes.
Sure.
I mean, it was a 1 seed last year, had another strong year, especially after this winter. It takes on the number 15 seed Donut Holes.
Okay.
All right. So that's there are some matchups there. That leaves us with one remaining region.
Yes, the John Gallioni bracket. The number 1 seed mozzarella sticks.
Is this another listener region?
Yes.
Okay, so Russ Schneider and John Gallioni are the guys who
And he it. Got and he partially got it because Jay said he has the fattest name he's ever heard.
John Gallioni?
Am I wrong?
That's pretty good.
It's large.
Yeah. So number 1 seed mozzarella sticks, very tough. Up against joggers. Now, I need to clarify, this is not people that run. This is the specially designed sweatpants for fats.
Okay.
Yes. Number 8 seed, basketball shorts, take on number 9, oversized hoodies.
Mm-hmm. 8-9 again.
And they go hand in hand, don't they? Number 5 seed, Notorious B.I.G. up against one of Dan's favorites, the number 12, gas station hot food.
Underrated. If you know what you are doing, and that hot dog on the little roller thingy, yes, the longer the hot dog is on the roller board, the more cancer it has. Yes, I know, but cancer is so delicious. It is building up layers and layers and layers of goo. Ugh. You've got to know what you're doing, man. And the 7-Eleven Tyson hot wings, the best.
Okay.
The best. All right, noted. Keep going.
All right, the number 4 seed playing center and pick up basketball up against the 13 young Jonah Hill. The 6 seed fried egg on a sandwich up against the number 11 Pop-Tarts.
Mm-hmm.
Tough one. I ate all the Pop-Tarts at Score House.
Lots of Pop-Tarts.
I used them as kindling. I mean, the boxes at least.
Yes. Well, I emptied the box for you. Happy to do that for
Thank
the team.
Thank you so much.
Portillo's cheese sauce is taking on President Taft in the 3-14 matchup.
Ooh. He'd be so proud. We're President Taft, who was also a Supreme Court justice, President of the United States, and best known for being fat.
And for losing to Portillo's cheese sauce.
That ain't happening. That ain't it, Chief.
Yeah. Great job of the whole being president and serving on the Supreme Court thing, but, you know.
This readily accessible condiment has you beat.
All right, the number 7 Little League catchers taking on nose tackles. One becomes the other eventually.
One ages into the other.
Yeah, yes. Shane was very mad about the Little League catcher saying, I was a catcher. I have a beard and I make meat. Like, well, you were a big kid, right? Yeah. Okay,
proof. Well.
There's your proof. Mm-hmm. And the formidable number 2 seed, Bartolo Colon.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, goes against slow pitch softball, number 15. The greatest slow pitch athletes are all fat men. So there you go.
This is a battle.
All right. March Fatness 2019 to vote, to follow along as this goes on. You can go to 670thescore.com/March Fatness. It is all there for you.
We'll talk a little of hoops with Mark Schanowski, the NBC Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host next at 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Hey, Schanowski, I heard what you said.
Mark Schanowski.
I've seen a handful of different times where there was video of him lighting up Jamokes in pickup games.
NBC Sports Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host.
What the hell? Fans locked out on the right hand.
Mr. Carter to you.
The most interesting man in the world.
I'm coming for you, man. You heard it here first.
Mark Schanowski with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Let's talk some Bulls with Mark Schanowski. He's on Twitter, at Mark Schanowski. You watch him before, during, and after games on NBC Sports Chicago. He joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Well, that just about did it. They had an opportunity to go in and lose to Phoenix, but behind Robin Lopez and Cristiano Felicio, that pretty much locks him in, I think, to that 12.5% chance of Zion, no?
Yeah, I would think so. Cleveland's been playing a lot better basketball lately, but they're two games clear of the Bulls right now. So I think it's pretty unlikely, given what the two schedules look like, that the Bulls are going to catch them. And you're right, they had a really good chance the other night. You lose that game, you're within one of the Suns. And, you know, they tried. They threw Felicio out there. They played the reserves for a good stretch of the game. But, you know, all of a sudden, Robin Lopez has turned into Kevin McHale, and nobody can stop him.
He's been absolutely fantastic. It makes me think back to the conversation about letting him have a buyout and walking away and the what-ifs of what he'd look like on somebody else's roster. Have you changed your mind at all as to whether or not he kind of fits coming back next season now that we've got Boylan entrenched in a little bit of different things than he's been into the first couple weeks of his tenure?
I think because they're only 2 years into the rebuild, they're still trying to construct a roster that could compete in the Eastern Conference. And it's been a nice story. It's been fun for us to talk about in the pre- and post-game shows. But, you know, Rolo's an old-school big man. This is his 11th year in the league. And I asked Kendall if he's ever seen a guy transform himself at this point in his career. And he said he couldn't remember anybody who's done quite what he's done. You know, granted, it's a pretty small sample size. It's about a 5 or 6 weeks since Robin decided he was going to become a low-post scorer. But the fact that he can make those jump hooks with either hands, and, you know, his moves are very deliberate and almost mechanical at times, but it's very effective. You know, he gets guys off balance, he gets them leaning the wrong way, and he's been able to score. I think it's going to pay off for him in terms of getting a contract from some team in free agency this summer, but you got to remember, he's making $14 million this year, and I don't think he's going to get anywhere close to that in free agency. I think with the Bulls, they'd rather get a backup five who can, you know, test you from three-point range, who can defend on high screen and rolls, and Rolo doesn't really fit in either of those equations. And the other thing is, Wendell Carter is coming back next year. Presumably he'll be healthy for most of the year, and he'll play at least 30 minutes. So Lopez may not even be that excited about returning to a situation where he's going to be a backup who's only going to play 15 to 18 a night.
Some great nuggets from your network colleague, Mark Strotman, who noted in 26 minutes, Robin Lopez scored 24 points with 0 three-point attempts and just 2 free throw attempts. That had not been done since Nikola Vucevic scored 24 with 0 three-point attempts and 1 free throw attempt in 25 minutes in March of 2016. Also, Robin Lopez has 3 outings of 24 or more points in his last 15 games. And before this stretch, he had scored 24 or more 3 times in his previous 226 games. I mean,
yeah,
it's just amazing. It's incredible.
It really is. He's channeling Kevin McHale. I mean, it's the same kind of playbook, you know, the up and unders, the spins in the lane. It's been amazing to watch. But part of that is because of the coaching philosophy that Jim Boylan wants those post touches. He gets a lot of chances usually in the first quarter. It's kind of like old school Bulls with Bill Cartwright and Luke Longley, where they go down to the post and see if they get some easy baskets early. I don't think that is going to be something you can sustain over 82 games. But as I mentioned, it's coming at a good time for Rolo because he's heading into free agency and prospective teams are wondering, maybe we've got something more here than we thought, than just a hardworking role player who could play tough defense and set screens.
Mark, I don't know if you read through Fred Katz's article. He's writing up Jabari Parker and his new fit in D.C. under head coach Scott Brooks. But Parker has some quotes in there as it relates to his tenure with the Bulls. And I'll just read this one real quickly. I wonder what you think of it and wonder how it fits into what this season has been. When asked about the difference between Brooks and Boylan, about the fits, really, Parker said it's up to the player to overcome all those frustrations and lack of relationship to perform. So it can be either on either end. I can personally say that I've handled both those once before. You know, in Chicago, I just didn't have the best relationship with Jim Boylan, but I made sure I was there. There's no what can you say that he did wrong. When I got my opportunity, I took advantage of it because I know how much I love the game. There's a disconnect between the two of them, and it's not the first time that the Bulls as a front office have given a coach, regardless of how they got to Jim Boylan, a player that didn't quite fit.
Yeah, just a horrible fit, you know, from day one. He just has an inflated opinion of who he is as a player. You know, that when he came out of Duke, there were all the comparisons to Carmelo Anthony, and he was going to be this power small forward who was going to overpower, you know, lighter guys in the post, and he was going to be a 25-point-a-game scorer. And maybe it's because of the injuries, maybe it's just because of work ethic, but he hasn't developed to anywhere near close those kind of expectations. And right now, like a lot of people do in their lives, they blame other people for the problems that they have. And if Jabari would really be honest about his Chicago experience, he'd realize that he didn't put his best effort into it. He was not a willing practice player, didn't accept coaching, and because of that, he fell out of the rotation when Jim Boylan took over. And then, you know, fortunately, the Bulls were able to use that $20 million and move it on to Washington and bring in Otto Porter, who fits a lot better with what they're trying to do in their rebuild. But, you know, Jabari can lash out and blame other people for what didn't work with the Bulls, but obviously he deserves a lion's share of the blame for that not working out.
Jim Boylan's not making a lot of friends amid his coaching counterparts in the league right now, and I don't know why he's choosing to do some of the stuff when he doesn't have to, especially this is his first shot, and there's all kinds of end-game dust-ups here with people not appreciating some protocol violations. Do you know why he's choosing to do this?
He would tell you that he's just trying to work with a young team in terms of after timeout situations, trying to run plays the correct way. And the whole thing with Doc Rivers was ridiculous because from the beginning of time, big men have been setting screens at half court, trying to pick off, you know, a point guard pressuring the ball. And it's up to the Bulls center, in the Bulls case, Robin Lopez, to call out the screen and for the point guard to move around it. You know, for him to say that those were dirty plays and he didn't like it, so he let Doc know about it, it's just insane. And then the other situation with Phoenix, I mean, you talk about protocol. Here you got a coach from Russia worried about violating the NBA protocol. Igor Kokoskov didn't like the fact they called a timeout. And it was funny that, you know, they took a deliberate foul so they couldn't execute the play that they had drawn up during the timeout. It is very strange, and I think it goes back to some of the college mentality. I mean, that's only his head coaching experience was at Utah. And there, you know, coaches call timeouts and do things that people just don't question. But in the NBA, as you mentioned, there's situations where you're expected to do one thing and he's kind of going the other. I mean, he feels like this is his opportunity to prove that he can be an NBA head coach, and he's not going to worry about what the comments are going to be from the media or other coaches, but it has been kind of strange these last couple of games.
I'm talking about the Bulls with Mark Schanowski. He is the pre- and post-game host of the NBC Sports Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game show. It works out that way. Mark, I've been thinking about something for a couple of weeks now, and I'm worried that the answer might be no, we'll never know because you can't find this counterfactual. But is there anything that could happen over the next, I don't know, call it a year, that would help prove to you that Jim Boylan doing what he did in breaking things down and crawling before you walk and walking before you run and inciting just a little bit of mutiny and all that stuff, is there anything that could happen that would reinforce that was necessary?
No, I don't think so. I've always held to the notion that the NBA is a players' league and the coaches can really be more of an impediment than they can really make you a great team. I really don't feel like anything that he's done in terms of, you know, trying to go with that boot camp mentality and have them run sprints and do push-ups and all that stuff, I don't think ultimately that's going to make them more tough-minded, make them execute better in late-game situations. It's all about talent. And you saw when they got that initial burst when Otto Porter came in that, you know, you brought in a quality NBA player at a position of need and you won some games. And now they've backslid a little bit. I don't know if they're all just looking forward to the end of the season and getting off on vacation, but they're going to have to improve the talent level. You know, obviously this upcoming lottery, if they could somehow beat the odds, get Zion Williamson, all of a sudden Jim Boylan or anybody else who's coaching that team is going to look a whole lot smarter. And they need to add some veterans to improve that second unit because that's been a drag on the team in most games. They're going to have to improve the roster. And ultimately, Boylan, I think, will grow as a coach, but I don't think that's going to be the key equation into whether or not this team finds some success next year.
Real question. If the Bulls end up with the number one pick, how does that change the way they look at Jim Boylan? Do you then say, well, you know, we had a nice little experiment going on with some of these players. Or do you look at it, this just got real, let's stop screwing around and see what we can do to make sure that this possibly generational player doesn't have to have anything undone and gets the best coaching we can find immediately?
Well, in talking to people at the United Center, unless they are overtly lying to me, Jim Boylan will be back next year. I don't think there's any set of circumstances that will set a chain of events in motion where they're going to decide, well, we better make the coaching change now. I think they're going to look at Zion Williamson as a guy who is potentially a generational talent, and they're going to let Jim have him and see what he can do with him. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to have a long leash. They could decide that during the season it's not working out, but for next season, during training camp in September, Jim Boylan is going to be the coach no matter what they do to the roster, and it's going to be up to him to prove that he can be successful in the NBA level.
Anybody outside of Zion or even Ja Morant in the tournament that you're most excited to watch from a draft perspective?
Yeah, you know, I like this kid from Texas Tech, Jared Culver.
Yeah.
He's 6'6". He kind of reminds me of DeMar DeRozan. He's more of a mid-range scorer than a three-point shooter. But he's very, you know, he's got that NBA body. He's very smooth in the way he moves around the court. And I think that if he was featured in an offense, if he ran particular sets for him, I think he could be a pretty good scorer in the league. Now, obviously, as I mentioned, the Bulls need to improve their bench. If they slide down to 6 or 7 and you're looking at, well, what are we going to do now? I think he could do worse than getting a versatile 6'6 wing who could really provide some punch for your second unit. I think there's going to be a lot of groundswell that they should take a point guard no matter what. You know, you get the kid from Vanderbilt, Darius Garland, who's coming off a meniscus tear. Kobe White's generating a lot of buzz. I mean, initially he was considered a second-round pick. Now I've seen some mock drafts having him in the lottery. There's going to be some pressure on the Bulls to try to address point guard right away, but, you know, you could do that in free agency. If you find a guy that you like, that you think they can really help you off the bench, I think they're still in the stage in this rebuild where you got to go for best player available. Now, I like Ja Morant. If they have the second or third pick, I would go there. But I think that if you fall down to 5, 6, 7, I think you got to forget about position and just get the best guy because they still have a number of areas, particularly the bench, that need to be addressed.
And you've got the Wizards tonight on NBC Sports Chicago.
Yes, the return, part two of Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker. Bobby's starting now and playing pretty well. You know, he obviously got that started with the Bulls. He had a couple of huge games before the trade. And Jabari's getting his minutes. He's getting what he's asked for. So he gets one of the first guys off the bench. He played 30 minutes the other night and scored 19 points. So I'm sure both of them will again try to come back and stick it to the team that traded him away. So it should be fun. We've got a 6:30 pregame. And, you know, as late season games go, this one does have some interest.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
Mark Schanowski of NBC Sports Chicago, brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Why do banks make banking so incredibly complicated at Lakeside Bank? They make banking incredibly easy. No hoops to jump through. The bankers have the experience and authority to get things done fast. They've made banking simple. Join them. Lakeside Bank. It's about time.
Noted baseball observer, writer, analyst, and Mike Trout knower, Joe Sheehan, is going to join us on the other side. He of SI and Baseball America. You heard his stuff all over the place. He'll join the show next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.